Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Diecast. I'm Seamus, and with me this week is Joshua.
But am I really?
And Christopher.
I am here.
And Ruxgarnian.
Yes, Josh, you are here. Trust me, we can smell you.
I mean, is here like a place, or just like sort of a...
Right now, I'm defining this zone by the locus of the smell, Josh.
And what does it mean to be, really? I mean, I am here.
No. That... Guys, we're doing the philosophy podcast later. This is the video game podcast.
Oh, okay. Damn it.
Oh, right, the important stuff. Yeah, let's get going.
Yeah. All right, so this week, I guess we're just doing a great big bag of mail, because the more we ask for mail, the less you send, and the more we, like, don't do the show at all, the more mail piles up.
For, like, 3 weeks?
Yeah, but, I mean, no, we'll go for a whole week and get no mails. This week, we have dozens, and this isn't even including all the ones that I discarded. So, first of all, like, everybody in the whole internet sent us a question asking various, hey, what do you guys think of the rumor that Microsoft's going to buy Mojang? Hey, what do you guys think of the fact that Microsoft is going to buy Mojang? Hey, what do you think of the fact that they have bought Mojang? Hey, what do you think's going to happen now that Mojang has been bought and it's been announced? So, let's talk about that.
Okay.
So, okay. I'm having... flashbacks to when the Oculus Rift was bought by Facebook, basically. It's been kind of a defining thing this year, is big company buys beloved smaller company, and the world temporarily ends, I guess.
The thing everybody's asking is why. If you run the numbers, Microsoft paid $2.5 billion for this. If you run the numbers, for them to make their money back, they would need to sell, Minecraft has sold 53 million copies so far. They would need to sell that many again at $40 a piece. So they probably didn't do this to turn a profit on it. Whatever they're doing, this has got to be strategic.
Although they did release something about shareholders, when did they expect it? They expected them to make back their profit sometime in 2015. I think it was like June or July 2015. And people, you know, that's a really dangerous statement to make to non-shareholders, because there's two possibilities. One is that that's bullshit, and that is not going to happen, in which case, yeah, you know, you're being dishonest. And the other is, it's accurate, and they're getting that money from somewhere.
Was that... department-wide, or was that very specifically about the Mojang deal? So if it's like the entire Xbox One department, then I can see them recouping, you know, some amount of money by 2015, especially if they manage to get the manufacturing down to the point where they're making a profit on the console. I don't remember if they were selling the consoles at a profit from the start, but...
I am looking for the exact...
Meantime, I don't know, I think this is a really, really good bit of news for Notch. I think this is a really, really bad bit of news for Minecraft.
Man, I mean, Notch went in there as just, like, making this clone of a game that he liked. Well, Minecraft isn't a clone, but it was based on, what was the...
Infiniminer.
I don't remember, some... Yeah, Infiniminer. As just like, you know, some guy making that as a pet project, in the same way that Seamus makes pet projects sometimes, like Good Robot and so on, and now he's a billionaire. Maybe not quite a billionaire after the Swedish tax laws eat it, but...
Well, but, I mean, that, I realize that maybe this was not where his heart was, running this multi-million dollar mega monolith company. Wasn't where his heart was when, shortly before this announcement, only like a week or two before, I saw him live streaming a, I believe it was a HTML5 renderer for Doom in a web browser, and he was just streaming like as he made it, like, hey, look, I'm making it work, it's cool, and I'm like, that's never going to make anybody any money. It's just something he does because he likes to tinker. He's not a CEO multi-million dollar guy, and he's not a... you know, auteur game designer. He's a tinkerer.
Yeah, he's not Cliffy B, who wants to be out there, you know, stirring shit, making enemies, you know, launching huge press releases, getting in front of cameras. That's what he has to do.
He's more of a ludum dare slash, you know, game jam slash, hey, look at this cool thing that I hacked apart and put back together to run in a web browser now kind of guy, more than the CEO kind of guy. And I think that's one of the big reasons why he left. And his going away message clearly implied that he was not super happy staying at Mojang as CEO.
I mean, he started his going away message with the line, I don't see myself as a real game developer. I make games because it's fun and because I love games and I love to program, but I don't make games with the intention of them becoming hits, and I don't try to change the world. Like, I think he's always sort of been really uncomfortable with the way that Minecraft has sort of thrust him into the spotlight as this, like superstar game developer.
And you know what?
He obviously had never intended.
He fucking won! Like, he managed to make so much money in one go that he could spend the rest of his life, you know, in a mansion somewhere, designing fiddly little hacks of games and putting them out there, and
yeah,
he will have never have any troubles for the rest of his life.
Well, even then, like, I'm pretty sure at this point he has to be, I don't know if he does or doesn't, I don't keep up with Ludum Dare, but I imagine if he does submit games to Ludum Dare, he might do it under a pseudonym. Just because,
yeah.
Like, do you really want, like, how are people going to vote on the Notch game if they know it's by Notch? And, like, that's going to mess with your head, man, to, like, did I make a cool thing?
Yeah.
Or did I make a thing that everyone says is cool because they know who I am and I'm the dude that made Minecraft?
Yes. Oh, and it would hit the news, hey, Notch is releasing a new thing, and everybody would go, and of course it's not supposed to be viewed by the public. It's supposed to be viewed by the people involved in this little community. So absolutely, if I was Notch, I would do things under a pseudonym.
And yeah, that's true. On the one hand, that's true, but on the other hand, like, that's not going to be a problem forever. The internet really and gamers really do have kind of short memories about this sort of thing. If Notch, like,
about
if
what
Notch
sort
releases,
of thing?
Oh, okay, look, I think if Notch just releases, like, you know, his own little pet projects that are in of a couple of years, in a few years, you know, people will remember he's, you know, people won't, like, forget that he made Minecraft. They won't forget that he's behind that. But, you know, they won't talk about him either. You know, they won't seek him out.
I don't know, yeah. Man. Like, Minecraft has a level of cultural ubiquity that I don't think we quite recognize. Like, it has t-shirts in Targets in flyover country. That is something that major AAA games don't have. You can't walk into a Target in Montana and buy a t-shirt for Gears of War or whatever, but you can for Minecraft. And that level of ubiquity is just such a huge cultural force that kids growing up playing games now, I think, will look to him as a bit of the way kids my age looked up to Shigeru Miyamoto, like some sort of foundational builder of their childhood. And I don't think he wants that. I think that makes him deeply uncomfortable. But I also think that's kind of a reality.
Yeah. I guess this is one thing we're really going to have to wait and see. I think to some extent, like, your perception of Notch really does depend on who you are and what culture you're in. Because when I think of people remembering Notch, I guess I think of, like, the people who send him tweets about the latest update, you know, messing up their redstone circuitry. You know, I don't think about, like, some 12-year-old kid who, like, follows Notch's Twitter and Fred's Twitter and Angry Orange's Twitter.
But those kids are out there, and they're huge in numbers.
Yeah, no, I mean, those kids are the driving force of the hobby.
Yeah.
So, clearly Notch wanted an out, but what does this mean for Minecraft?
Not
good. Yeah.
Yeah, we can't say, really, but yeah, I would say probably not good myself.
I don't see any benefit. I mean, I don't see, like, Minecraft is suddenly going to get better.
Well, now they have the whole Microsoft corporate structure above them to support, in big air quotes, their development.
Well, it's kind of like, I don't think that they're going to turn the, like, you know, for the sake of argument, the tenderloin steak of Minecraft into something else, like a piece of garbage. But I think what we are going to start seeing is situations where it's like, hey, we're offering you this dish. It's a dead pigeon and some rotten grapes and this tenderloin steak. You like the tenderloin steak?
Yeah, one thing I've been waiting for them to finish for a long time is the mod interface. Right now, installing mods is really, really crappy. Requires hacking away at jar files, and people have built installers to get around that so you don't have to do that crap. But it's still fiddly, and it's not drag and drop. It's not seamless, and it could be. you can design that, and they've been talking about doing that for ages. If I wanted to take a bet, I'll bet you that's the first thing Microsoft's going to want to can. It's like, wait, we're spending lots and lots of time to let people mod our games so that they won't need a sequel or another version or more content for it.
That's ultimately the biggest thing I see as a danger here, which is that now that Microsoft owns Minecraft, they're going to want to ship a lot of copies of Minecraft, and the best way to do that is to first cancel development on, or cancel the further development on Minecraft itself, and start Minecraft 2, whatever the hell Minecraft 2 means. And then, you know, Minecraft 2 will come out, and it'll be an Xbox One exclusive for, like, 12 months, and then it'll finally come out on the PC and mobile platforms, but fuck you, PlayStation players.
Yeah, it would be based on C++, DirectX, so it would just be, married. You are not gonna... One of the beauties of Minecraft is that you can mod it. You can rip open jar files and put stuff in them to make the game behave differently. If you write stuff in C++, that gets way, way, way harder. So hard that most people don't bother. So it could kill the modding community.
Let's just put it this way. There's nothing Microsoft is going to do that's going to make Minecraft better. There's not a single incidents of them caring about the end user in any kind of concrete or actionable way.
Right. Games for Windows Live.
These are the guys who just a year ago announced the Xbox One with all those awful features that were going to kill rented games and used games and all that.
Yeah, and that's what I'm saying. The absolute best we're going to get at this point is the Xbox One without the always-on Kinect. And that's basically all that needs to be said.
If I had to guess, and I don't want to be prognosticating because I'm sure I'm going to be wrong, but if I had to guess, I would think that they're, if for PR reasons alone, not going to touch development on the PC version of Minecraft for a little while. Really what they're going to want to do is basically going forward, all development on the PS4 version is immediately canceled. Whatever's there is there, and you can just download it and run with it. And really, going forward, they're going to push exclusive mobile content, exclusive mobile DLC, exclusive mobile versions.
Oh, God.
Because that's what they want, is to sell their emerging Microsoft Phone, Microsoft Surfaces, that sort of thing. And that's where we're going to see Minecraft 2 emerge, is in a mobile touchy interface.
Yeah, from a tactical perspective, you know, taking control of the project, canceling the PS4 version, announcing a super shiny version exclusive to Xbox One, you know, that's not a bad move to make. You know, if you're going to make this investment, that's a pretty decent strategy.
Now, the interesting thing about that is they've already laid out a framework for people to get really pissed off at them for doing that, because, like, even more so than usual, because one of the things that was on the Mojang post was, we're not going to stop development, sales, or support of the PC, Mac, Xbox 360, Xbox One, PS3, PS4, Vita, iOS, and Android versions of Minecraft. And then, of course, Microsoft can't make decisions for other companies to predict the choices they might make in the future. And we're extremely proud of all the additions and awesome things you have achieved through playing together. So, like, the idea, the implication there is, like, no, we're not just going to immediately cancel the PS4 version a week after it came out or anything like that. Which means that in the sometime future when they do, people will be able to go back and look at that post and say, what the fuck are you doing, Microsoft? So, I don't know.
Well, they could just stop updating it. They could just not update it. That's all they need to do. And then just keep updating the other versions, and then that one will get more and more stale.
Well, I mean, that's just spite at that point.
Yeah.
I guess the problem I'm seeing isn't, or at least what I'm trying to say is, the problem of Microsoft buying Mojang and taking control of Minecraft is not a short-term problem. It's not going to be something we're going to be complaining about in 6 months or even a year. But 5 years from now, or even 10 years from now, we're going to realize, remember Minecraft? That game was effing awesome until Microsoft ruined it. And it's only a matter of, at what point does that happen? Is that 5 years out? Is that 10 years out? Is that 3 years out? Because at some point, they are going to release a Minecraft 2. They are going to make this DLC-filled, you know, crossover. Because, I mean, even on the consoles already, you have all that stupid, you want Mass Effect DLC? Well, buy Mass Effect DLC that reskins everything. And I don't know if, I mean, Seamus, are you even aware that stuff exists?
Yeah.
Because that stuff is weird.
I mean, on the PC, you know, you just make your own texture packs and everything, and I'll bet your Microsoft would love to be able to sell that sort of things on the console. I don't think it would be feasible to sell it on the PC, but I could see them wanting to be some kind of gatekeeper for that kind of content on Xbox.
It makes me wonder if we're going to eventually see an Infiniminer or some other game that is basically an open source version of the same thing that is super modder friendly.
Yeah, yeah. Just open source it.
Well, they won't open source Minecraft. Oh, God. But
right, right. But what if somebody just started writing an open source Minecraft clone?
Seamus kind of has the framework for it.
Oh, really? That's true. If it was open source, it wouldn't matter that it wasn't in... Oh, wow. Okay, we got to stop talking about this. In fact, let's move on to the next question. Okay, here's a great reason not to pursue that. Next question. Seamus, good robot. What's the happy haps? Best regards, Jared. Well, there you go. That's a good reason I don't take on a massive project. Sometimes my projects stall. Good robot is stalled because the gameplay isn't fun enough. It's fun for 10 minutes, not fun for a few hours. And I feel, you know, imagine a version of Mario where you've just got that first level. And, you know, you jump on a few turtles. Oh, that's cute, but that's not going, you know, you need layers of other stuff to do or other mechanics or mechanics that interact with each other. And I don't think I have that. And there are a lot of different ways I could fix it. And I'm not sure which way to go, which means lots and lots of prototyping. And I'm sort of paralyzed by choice, and every time I try and figure it out, I step away from it. And maybe I should open source that. Maybe I should just give the source away and see what people do with it, rather than just let it languish. I don't know what I want to do going forward with Good Robot. It's fun to work on, but I would rather not release anything than release something crappy. I guess, is
now,
how I feel.
Which
about
direction would you be inclined to go in? Like, would you be inclined to... I mean, I say this after you just say that you're paralyzed by choice. Would you be inclined to massively tweak the mechanics? Or would you be inclined to add, like, a different gameplay framework, like a narrative framework or something like that?
My gut tells me it's the mechanics that need work. It needs, like, some kind of depth. It needs to feel more fun in your hands. So that's what I think the problem is. I mean, you know, we could add story and give it more of a story drive so that you keep playing, so that you see what happens next in the story, but that's fundamentally an ugly way to patch crappy underlying mechanics. I mean, okay, that worked great for KOTOR and Mass Effect 1. A lot of people played a really shitty game to get a story, but you're basically giving up on the gameplay at that point. And the reason I did this is I wanted to make something that was fun to play. So my gut tells me fix the mechanics. And technically we do have a little bit of story in there. I mean, we've got some dialogues there that I think are pretty charming.
Yeah, like when you sent me the stuff you already had, like it was really, like you had a really good angle that you were working.
Yeah, but I mean, that'll pull... Oh, you're so humble. The best ones were written by you. Okay, and that, there's no way around that.
I actually really liked the stuff you wrote. I like, that was sort of what I was trying to... Okay, you know what? People can't actually see any of this stuff.
Yeah, this is great going on this tangent here for this game you're never going to release.
Yeah, I should at least release a playable demo. Maybe that's what I'll do this week, is I'll take the private demo I've been releasing and just put it out there and see what see how people react to it.
Yeah, and maybe, like, what's maybe the worst that's going to happen is, you know, the internet has proven that, like, even if, you know, you release a premature version of a game for free, that it by no means precludes people buying a much more awesome version later down the road.
Yeah.
That's,
but
like,
I don't know,
practically the new business model.
Yeah, but it's a long way to release, and that's it. The work from here on out is mostly really grunt work and interface work, and I'm not inclined to do it when I don't believe in the gameplay and I don't know how to fix the gameplay, so I'm stuck here. And I'd rather be working on Oculus Rift stuff, so I don't know. That's why it's stalled.
Did you actually ever fix your problem with Visual Studio?
It is fixed now, I think. I haven't tried all my old projects. Some things were broken, some things weren't. It's a long story. Let's not get into it. I think I can write code again. I think I can go back to good robot again. All right, next question. What is your opinion, hopefully not a skeleton crib this week, nope, not, of the depth of field, bloom, and motion blur? Do you turn it off, love it, hate it, something else? Hopefully you have different opinions on those special effects amongst each other.
Oh, we do. We absolutely do.
Depends on the game, I think. Some games benefit from it, some games are just awful.
I'm a Philistine. I love bloom. I'll turn on all the bloom lighting, just sparkle time. Bright colors and bloom. If you want to make a game that I love and go on and on about how good the art is, you just cover it in gloss and bloom and depth of field effects. And I know I'm always dumping on games substituting graphical spectacle and for, you know, good gameplay or whatever. So I realize it's a little hypocritical, but when I look at bloom, I'm charmed by it. On the other hand, I hate motion blur. Oh my goodness, motion blur needs to get lost forever. Screw motion blur. I've never seen a motion blur I did not hate.
Well, motion blur is mostly to hide the really choppy movement that comes with panning the camera around at 30 frames a second. So if you can get your frame rate up to 60, then it seems kind of pointless to have motion blur.
Yeah, it's like it's just deliberately sabotaging and making your 60 frames a second game look like a 30.
I have strong opinions about this. I think that depth of field, bloom, and motion blur are tools that can be used to make a game look really good. I believe that they have made games look worse as an existing tool. Like, I think that, like, almost every game that uses these, the product is so much worse than the final. Like, for example, I was playing Far Cry 3 a long time ago, and I was noticing how much worse I think it looks than Far Cry 2. Because, like, it's just little things like, sort of in Far Cry 3, like, the people's clothing looks really kind of plasticky. Like, as the bloom, like, sort of the glow off of it. Yeah.
Oh, okay, the plastic look, I've been blaming that on bad use of bump mapping. It was really bad in Dead Island, where everybody looked like a plastic action figure. I don't think that's the fault of bloom. I can't be sure, but I really think...
How many games still even use bloom? Most of the stuff that bloom does, you can do better with newer lighting techniques like screen space, ambient occlusion, and so on.
Okay, I'm probably speaking from a technical perspective very loosely, but I actually am also referring to sort of the phenomenon of like the halo of light you get around things, and sort of like the soft light glowing off of things.
You know what? I need to back up. I said I love games with bloom, but now I realize I love games with bloom that have a whimsical art style. As soon as you mentioned that plastic look, I thought of Dead Island, and I realized, holy cow, bloom probably has no place or is greatly misused in photorealistic game. When I say I love bloom, what I really mean is I love a lot of really charming, whimsical, cartoony games that have bloom. So, I retract my earlier praise of bloom. Go ahead.
Yeah, that's sort of what I'm talking about is, you know, these techniques are often used with the idea that it makes things look more real, but none of it actually corresponds to what the world looks like unless you're wearing smeared glasses. And that's exactly, because I wear glasses and because I'm filthy, that's exactly what it looks like when I play this sort of game, to the point where it kind of gives me a headache. Like, I'm looking around at this sort of, like, this smeared lights everywhere.
That's a good segue into the point I wanted to make. Motion blur is kind of apart from this, but depth of field and bloom both are, among other things, like dirty as crap lenses, recent parts of a trend to make games look more like film by faking camera behavior. And this is as old as, like, you know, Duke Nukem had lens flares.
Yeah.
But lens flares are just, like, one little thing. When you combine lens flares with, like, actual dirty lenses in the cameras, like Destiny has this, Battlefield 4 has this hardcore, dirty lenses
film
everywhere.
Film grain filters.
Film grain filters, depth of field, bloom,
actually
HDR
kind of like
lighting.
The film grain effect in Mass Effect.
The film grain effect can be, they can all be used well because they can be used to evoke different types of media. The film grain effect in Mass Effect was used to sort of pull at, you know, various old-timey sci-fi films.
Yeah.
And same thing with, like, the film grain and vignetting in Left 4 Dead. They're cool techniques to sort of evoke references to another film media, to references to film media, but I'm uncomfortable with them becoming sort of, like, mainstays of game aesthetics, if only because
right.
we have the power to do almost anything and we don't need to behave like there's a lens in front of the camera, and we work so
also,
hard to pretend that we do have one.
Yeah. Devs tend to seem to go crazy with them, like Rome 2 last year shipped with depth of field as an option, which is really weird in a game where you spend the vast majority of your time hovering over troops as a space camera.
Depth of field in particular is awkward, I think, because when you're a filmmaker and you use it, you're using it to bring focus to a very specific plane in a three-dimensional field.
Yeah.
You're saying, this is what's important, what's behind them is blurred and not important, what's in front of them is blurred and not important. This thing in the middle, or whatever it is, if it's in the background, foreground, whatever, that's the thing we want to put into focus and isolate from everything that surrounds it. And that's a very, very specific, intentional thing they're doing. And in video games, 9 times out of 10, it's just like, oh, you brought the gun to your eye. It's blurry, because in real life, it would be blurry if you brought it to your eye. And it's like, that's just a pedantic, stupid, realistic, yeah, if you bring a gun 3 inches from your eye, it's going to be kind of blurry. That's not
yeah.
using cinematography to, like, sell a point. It's just sort of like, this looks realistic-ish.
Yeah.
Like, I don't mind depth of field in, like, BioWare talkie cutscenes.
Oh, yeah, that's a good point. Wait, it's a lot more acceptable in a cutscene. It gets annoying in gameplay. If one of these effects ever keeps you from seeing what you're trying to do, like, oh, the bloom is so strong, I can't see, is that something I should pick up, or is that just a shiny thing on the ground, then it immediately becomes something you resent.
You know, there's kind of a genre of flourishes in gaming, or that are supposed to make things feel like a more real, like they're supposed to give more verisimilitude, that take me out of the experience. And I wonder how much of that is, you know, having come from a background of, you know, games like Quake and Outlaws that had very little kind of, they didn't have like a lot of, there weren't a lot of touches on the mechanics to make it feel like anything but you piloting a game character, because in many cases it wasn't really practically possible. So when I load up a game and, like, you know, I move sort of sluggishly and, you know, I'm a little too heavy, like, you know, if I take it finishes the step even after I take my finger off the key, or, you know, when I sprint it does this, like, sort of really, like, shaking the camera around, breathing heavy and hands moving up in front of the screen, and, like, you know, then you stop and, like, you skid to a stop. You know, there's just a lot of stuff there where I feel like it's trying to make this feel more like I'm me. Like, it's, you know, like I'm really moving around and piloting a person. But I guess, like, to me, moving around doesn't feel like that. Like, it takes me out of the experience because it's like, well, I mean, firstly, in real life, when I run around, I have very good control over how I move and, like, how I navigate spaces. I don't run into problems. So when I have these problems in the game, it just highlights how loose my control over this avatar is. But also, it just sort of, it's like I'm used to the default being the other way around, being, you know, having, like, none of this sort of grease, which is supposed to make it feel real. And as a result, it just sort of feels odd in my hands.
I don't know, it's weird. It's a weird concept to try and, yeah.
Yeah, like, I definitely see what you mean. Like, it's arbitrary in many respects. It's actually just pulling from other mediums. But even when it is just trying to get more about how, you know, people actually move and interact, I feel like it's still, like, it's still kind of missing the point. I actually read an essay a while ago which talked about how if you want your game space to feel real, you actually make it bigger and more spaced out than it would actually be. Like, if you have an apartment, for example,
yeah.
like, you give lots of room around the table. Because if you make it the actual
yes.
size, it'll be really awkward for the player to walk around it, and they'll get hung up on chairs and stuff, and that doesn't happen to
or
them.
Any interior corridor is, like, a meter and a half taller than it should be.
Yes, and this is normal in a game, because it's a little harder. You're looking at the world through a 90-degree view. You know, it's you're literally wearing blinders, and you can't feel your body. and everything feels out of scale. Of course, this comes back to bite us when you put on the Oculus Rift, and suddenly you start perceiving this place, and you're like, hey, everything's too big. This feels weird. Yeah.
You know, actually, that actually also speaks to fast movement speeds. You know, if you ever think about designing a game, like, yeah, game design, people get the same bug up their ass they get with RPG design, where they're like, well, they start asking a lot of questions like, well, what if we made a thing where it was realistic? What if we made a thing where it's just like real life? Well, then you end up with a situation where the system doesn't support it properly, and that's where we get this, like, slow crawling movement speed thing from. Is because, you know, people say, what if people moved at a realistic speed, and then they put them in environments that, for the sake of game design, are not realistically proportioned.
Yeah, and then it feels, you feel like an ant crossing an auditorium, and it just feels
the
so
worst
slow.
Offender, I think, video game that I can think of the environments look way too large, is Star Trek Online. Which is, like, you've already got that kind of nostalgic idea of how Star Trek sets should look. But because the game has this janky third-person camera, they had to make all the environments bigger so that it doesn't look like you're in a claustrophobic ship all the time. So every all the corridors in that game are, like, 5 meters wide and 7 meters tall, and, like, they've recreated the geometry of, like, Star Trek bridges, but the bridges are, like, 3 times larger in every dimension than they were in the show, so it's like you're sitting
in a
gymnasium.
And they were already big in the show.
Yeah. It looks completely ridiculous and completely turned me off from all of the ground game of that game.
Okay. Okay, Humanoid has just announced on the forum that he is going to play Crusader Kings from scratch, meaning he's just now learning how to play the game. Till the end, before you finish your turn, will you just lay down and let him step over you like that? You push over you.
God damn it.
Also something Shogun 2 should... Yeah.
That's a very good question, Damien.
Thank you, Damien Lucifer. Wait, you don't have an answer for that, Josh? Okay, moving on.
Guess I will go and try to do it.
You know you're not
so
good.
Goddamn busy nowadays.
Hello, all. Are you planning to do The Walking Dead 2 on spoiler warning while it's still fresh, or do you have your fill of the franchise with the first one? Well, we don't do games when they're fresh, do we?
No, that's sort of not the point.
Yeah, we're kind of the spoiled warning.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not against... Did we even have The Walking Dead 2 on our list yet of games to consider? Because it wasn't even out all the way yet.
You guys haven't played it yet, so...
Well, it wasn't out.
Yeah, I'm not going to play it while it's halfway done. You know, you wait till the whole thing is done and then
play
through it.
Rutskarn
did. That's a bad
one.
No,
I didn't actually finish it. I only played the first three episodes.
Well, I mean, you played the first three chapters, so...
And then you lose your save, and you realize you got to start over, and you're like, oh, do I want to play these earlier chapters? And
How do you have so much trouble losing saves?
To come back around, I actually lost all my saves from season one. It sucked.
I mean, my problem is I had played the first game with my wife in the living room with the Xbox, and since we now have a PS4 in the living room, the Xbox is now in the office, and it's like, I'm not going to sit there and play with my wife in the office. That's a weird place to get everyone together and play it. So I just sort of have been waiting for the whole thing to come out, and I'm just going to breeze through it on the PC instead of making it a family thing. And so that's why I haven't touched it yet.
I will say that, you know, firstly, there's no reason we can't talk about it at all. Secondly, that I think this game has a lot of things to talk about. I was actually getting into sort of an interesting discussion with Jin, who's she's studying child psychology among, you know, all the other things she needs to get her PsyD. And, you know, there was a lot of really interesting discussions to be had there. And thirdly, I like this game better than this first season.
Oh, I haven't heard that yet. That's interesting.
I'm willing to commit to that. I think people were predisposed, for the most part, to not be as impressed by this game as they were by the first one. Because if you think about the first game, yeah, it was good. Like, when you think about it, you're like, yeah, that was a really good game. But when you think about, like, okay, so what was your favorite episode? The first one, where there was that really sort of awkward part, where you had all the puzzle gamey mechanics that didn't really make much sense. The second one, that didn't really have anything to do with the rest of the thing. The third one, that had that really sort of slow, weird part.
Yeah.
Fourth one, which was kind of short. Or the fifth one, where it felt like nothing really mattered.
Yeah, you know, felt like nothing really mattered, and you felt like going and having a cry at the end.
Yeah, I mean, it was great.
Yeah.
It was a great game, but, like, of course, when you're playing it, like, you find all these things that are wrong with it, because even though it's a great experience, you know, there's like, missteps and there's weaknesses. And I think right now, people are in a position of experiencing the missteps without experiencing the kind of, you know, without, like, sort of... Since they're holding up to the standards of the first game, like, that feeling of just being blown away by what's happening is gone. But I think that this is a better game, personally.
Also, people are kind of, like, wisened up to the fact that a lot of the choices that you think might have some effect don't actually have some effect.
Some of the illusion's gone. That's... But then again, they're actually... Some of the choices are more consequential.
That's good.
I really don't want to derail this with a Walking Dead conversation, but I still disagree with the idea that it's an illusion of choice, because sometimes it's a role-playing choice. Like, are you playing Lee the hard-ass or Lee the nice guy? And that choice matters, even if the response is the same.
Oh, I absolutely I'm down with that. What I dislike is, hey, do you want to kill this guy? And the choice is like... Or I can't remember. There were several choices in the game where, like, you want
like
to do
yes or no, and if you say no, he gets killed anyway,
exactly.
Or vice versa.
Yeah. So those choices kind of once you see that happen, then you start to wonder at all choices. You're going to wonder. They did that too often. I think that's okay once in a while. It's okay that not everything I decide happens. That's life sometimes. But the first game did a lot of that, and it started to feel like nothing you did matter. You suspect that nothing you did mattered, and you weren't sure. And then you start metagaming the whole time. You're like, is this gonna matter? Well, if I decide to let this guy live, maybe he'll die anyway, and then I'll get what I want. Maybe, and then he'll be dead, but I'll also get what I want over here. And you don't want that. So they can't push that too far, that none of your choices matter, or you'll just be sitting there thinking, which one will give me the Paragon points, or which one will make this person like me? And that's all people will care about, and they won't care about what happens. Because they know it doesn't matter, and they can't change anything.
The game doesn't have Paragon points.
You know what I mean. That's the type of decision that you'll be making. You'll be like, what gives me the good point? What makes people like me, or whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah, the one thing I think that's really interesting about Season 2, without spoiling absolutely anything, except the fact that, you know, the player character is Clementine, is that it really sort of makes you appreciate just how much of a power fantasy Lee was. He certainly didn't feel like a power fantasy when you were playing the fucking game.
Yeah.
I mean, you felt like sort of adrift. You felt like, you know, you were the victim of a crisis much larger than yourself. You know, you felt like people would get hurt and you couldn't do anything about it. But on the other hand, there's always the idea that if something went wrong, you would have the physicality and you would have the sort of the authority to take control of the situation and to deal with it.
Yeah.
And this game is so fucking daring because it doesn't always give you that. You know, because you're playing like an 11-year-old girl, like who everybody, you know, underestimates, who doesn't have a lot of physical strength, who, you know, people don't always want to listen to her. And it's really interesting, and it really sort of brings these situations home, and it creates much tenser situations than you could have had with Lee, because you always sort of had this assumption about Lee that he could take care of anything.
Yeah. Okay, Oh, go ahead, Chris.
I was just going to say, so, in short, there's no reason we won't do it, and we clearly have a lot to say on it, so it wouldn't surprise me if we eventually cover it, but we won't be covering it until after, at least until after The Last of Us, and... we have all played it, so.
Yeah, I would actually say the smart money is on, like, one season after The Last of Us.
Yeah. Yeah, because we wouldn't want to do two zombie games back-to-back. I think I'm going to need a zombie break.
So, of course, we'll be doing Dead Island.
We should do a game that everyone hates so that we can have a game that everyone likes afterwards. Let's do The Witcher between the two of them.
Anyway, moving on. Is there a reason you aren't on iTunes? I get this this question a lot. Why isn't our podcast on iTunes? You have to have an RSS feed that features it, and I don't know how to do that, and WordPress doesn't support it.
You have to
it, and,
also apply, and, don't you? Like, you have to get approved as a podcast.
And you have to have an iTunes account, and to have an iTunes account, you have to put iTunes on your machine, and I'm not putting that shit on my machine. That thing is an that's like 1995 real player level of annoying. Or at least it was when I tried it a couple years ago.
No, it still is.
drove me, oh, so annoying.
It's the only place I could digitally buy Indiana Jones, so I actually technically have it.
Wants to sit in the system tray all the time and annoy the shit out of you and thinks it's your media center, and no, I want nothing to do with that. You are not the center of my universe. Go away, iTunes.
Well, that's a way better answer than I had to that question, which was, well, I never actually looked into it.
Yeah, I mean, that I can't bring my, I think, oh, we should be on iTunes. So many people use iTunes. It's like not being on YouTube. It feels weird to not be on iTunes. But then I go to use it. I mean, really, I don't know why iTunes gets such a pass. It is the Facebook of music.
Well, because it's the same thing that you use for an iPod, and iPods are ubiquitous. I don't think anyone really likes using iTunes on the PC all that much.
No,
but
iPods are for people who leave their house, and I don't know anything about what happens outside of my house.
It's already the zombie apocalypse outside, you just haven't noticed.
I wouldn't know. Okay, so that's why we're not on iTunes. Dear casters of the die, you hear a lot of comments about games, movies, etc., with ancient traps working perfectly with no regard to how maintenance and decay, but have only ever run into one story that actually satirized that trope. Have you come across, have you ever come across stories that make fun of it? Do you think there's a reason such a common trope seems to have so few parodies, satires? Thanks for allowing the brain picking, Jekyll. I mean, I made the joke about the trap that only drops heads and skulls, and it's been there a long time.
I think to some degree people just don't think about it, really. It's very much background radiation.
Yeah. And plus, I mean, but you want traps.
Yeah, I mean, I actually, yeah, you know, it's kind of weird that you said this because, you know, I actually just announced, I don't know if you said this before or after, I actually just announced a novella which is going to deal with this fact pretty much head on at some point, like a novella
series. If you'd
like
to read it, support Rutskarn at his Patreon at patreon.com/Rutskarn. Is it Rutskarn?
That was very seamless, Joshua. Nicely done. Fit right into the Rutskarn conversation.
Oh, sorry, while you're asking that, my microphone just crashed, actually.
Excellent!
But it's back. Yes, that is in fact the Patreon, but that's something I sort of have grappled with as a GM, but it's something I've thought about a lot, and it sort of comes down to, on the one hand, it actually is possible to build a booby trap that's functional after a long period of time.
Yeah, it would not be complex, but
the question often isn't why is the booby trap still working? The question is, how did they build the booby trap in the first place? Like if you're in a stone corridor that's underground and you press a button and suddenly like pendulums scythe through the walls, okay, so that means that they excavated like, you know, an additional 20 by 20 foot cube on either side. 20 by 20 by 20 foot cube on either side of the hallway, and they included all of these mechanisms. And, like, that probably also had to go under the tunnel, and it has to be structurally stable. Like, that's when it starts getting weird. How did the engineers get back there to rig it up? How did they get out?
Yeah, when you don't have pourable concrete, once you excavate stone, you don't put it back. This
is
Minecraft.
I mean, it's an ancient temple. They just sealed the engineers in there when they were done.
Yeah, and that's kind of when you get into the fucked up territory. And also, like, okay, you know, I can't talk about this too much because I'm obviously going to write about it, and I want there to be surprised. But suffice it to say, yes, I have thought about that. And if you want to see some more ruminations on this point, I can tell you at least one place to go.
I'll tell you where to go. Okay. So Rutskarn's project is the answer to your question. Dear Diecast, how much do your online personas differ from your real-life personas? For example, is Mumbles really a cannibal that enjoys watching the suffering of others? Best regards, Jared.
Well, I'm not sure we can speak to Mumbles at this point, since she's not here. Or maybe we can. Let's talk behind Mumbles' back about her.
I actually, you know, from all reports I've heard, Mumbles is actually way less cannibalistic and violent and murderous on the show.
Yeah, she tones it down. I appreciate that.
She did punch a guy when I was at PAX with her.
She backfisted him. I mean, I think we all, to a certain degree, except Chris, We all, to a certain degree, have those traits that when people hook into it, we use it as a running joke, but I don't know if you could call that a persona. I mean, once in a while I joke about blah blah, games used to be better in the old days, I'm an old man. But is that really a persona? I mean, I don't, like, pretend to be, like, a 90-year-old man. I'm not, like, Plinkett, you know, oh, video games. I can't call what I'm doing a persona. I think that would be a disservice to people who craft actual personas. I think we like have Atlas. Just running gags.
I was just going to say that I feel more like each outlet on the internet gives me a different aspect of myself in a weird way. Like, I don't have personas. I really don't have a... There's not an errant signal character I put on, or
right.
I mean, there's not even really a Chris character I put on for spoiler warning. But... Each like, I'm a very different person on Twitter than I am on Errant Signal than I am on Spoiler Warning, and they all seem very disparate, but they're all different aspects of myself. Like, Errant Signal is really, really the composed, I sat down, I thought about this, I wrote this, this is my introspective self, and then Twitter is like, I saw this 5 seconds ago, this is my immediate response, this is me off the cuff, rah, 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 rah. It's
yeah.
sort of like an id, almost. It's... Twitter is my id, and then this is just sort of...
I heard a rumor, and it's bullshit, and I hate it, and I'm angry.
Exactly.
Spoiler warning is your pee pants.
And spoiler warning is sort of the mix between the two. It's off the cuff, but tried to be reasoned. It's I guess, sociable, conversational.
Yeah, that's what I've always gone for, is conversational.
Each one of those is a different face of who I am, so I guess they're personas in a certain sense, you know, in that, like, Ben Stein, we all wear masks, metaphorically speaking sense kind of thing, but no, I don't think I have, like, they're all supposed to be still me, they're just me in different contexts, so yeah. I guess that's how I look at it. Anyway, Retzkarn?
Yeah, I mean, I think I'm actually at slight risk of getting a little too real here, but I
do it, get real!
Way. Let's just, yeah, let me get down off my chair and sort of sit down on the floor with all you guys and we can rap for a while. seriously though, I feel like what I do as Retzkarn in any context isn't too different from what I would do in real life with friends or with other people. Like, I think actually to some extent I'm way worse at it in, like, when I'm live streaming or something than I am when I'm actually just sitting in a room bantering. I think I actually, like, freeze up a little bit on the internet sometimes. But, on the other hand, I do sort of sometimes feel like that part is... Well, I say I feel like I've absolutely identified that that is kind of a persona. That it does, you know... I think, to some extent, a lot of internet reviewers and, like, a lot of people who have their kind of, like, bombastic, like, outer voice... To some extent, they kind of do that because they feel like they have to, or because they're you know, insecure about other aspects of how they come across and, like, hold an audience's interest. But I don't know. That's sort
wait
of...
a minute. Is this a veiled jab against me?
I think that's no. maybe the sort of the origin of things like that. I mean, if you go back and look at. Because you can really trace a lot of this back to primarily, you know, Spoony, Nostalgia Critic, and Angry Video Game Nerd. But
or like further back
really,
to Maddox, for example.
I'm trying to figure out how to phrase this, but in a sense that became its own genre. Like, I don't know if you've been watching the latest Brows Held High stuff, but that's still very much in character. But it's still very interesting. Like, it's almost achieved a level of subgenre-iness to it, where it's now its own subgenre of internet video is the character reviewer, which originated with the angry gamer kind of person, but sort of has branched out into just anybody who has a shtick, and they use that shtick to become a character and then talk about a thing.
Zero
I
punctuation
I watch way too many videos
kind of thing.
On the internet.
Yeah,
exactly.
I don't
zero
speak...
punctuation is a good example. Yeah.
I don't want to speak either too broadly or too specifically in the case of, you know, like, the angry video gamer voice. I think what I'm more getting at is that, like, a certain form of, like, crowd-pleasery banter, like, stems... It, like, that kind of was always a little bit of a persona, that I think, with a lot of people. I, like, okay, what I'm sort of getting around to is I've had to discover, I've sort of discovered myself using this voice in the past. You know, this is no longer a problem at all. In situations where it isn't really appropriate, where people would rather just, like, sort of tone it down. And I sort of figured out that the origin of this persona is not to produce interesting internet content, but because I don't feel like I'm funny or interesting enough otherwise.
Huh.
This conversation sort of came to exactly the end point. I wasn't sure if, like, this is too much information for people. Like, I don't know if this is what he was asking when he asked about personas.
Maybe he was asking about the game Persona.
Yeah.
And we've just messed it up.
The Persona
series. I'm the only person here who's actually played it.
Yep.
So why is everybody else talking about Persona?
Persona is always a game which I think I might enjoy if I ever found myself in a scenario where I could play Persona.
Yep, that's what
as
I've always
JRPGs
thought. Man,
go,
everybody tells me, man, you'd really like Persona, Seamus. Now, maybe that's just fans who always think everybody would always like their thing, but it's happened often enough that I suspect it's true, but I've never,
I don't
like...
know, you might actually dig it. I think...
Yeah,
like,
I don't even know if it's on
the
PC.
Opportunity to play it.
I don't even know if it's on the PC.
It's not.
Yeah,
second of all,
it just wouldn't happen. Oh, yeah.
Persona is a game much like The Witcher, where I love some of the ideas it toys with and how literate it is, and then I realize that it's like a 17-hour game, and I'm like, nope, I'm out.
Okay, I really like the art style.
Isn't it
a serious,
like,
RPG?
45 hours.
Okay, exactly. That's my point, though. Like, it requires a massive time investment, and I'm like, yeah, that's where I'm piecing
out.
Jin wanted me to play Shin Megami Tensei Nocturne, and I did for a significant portion of time, which is to say, about 40 hours and 44% of Shin Megami Tensei Nocturne.
I mean, like, the first 3 hours of Persona 4, you barely control your character at all. It's just all dialogue and setup.
Yeah, I don't know.
I like the art
Maybe we
style
need to
a lot.
Stop talking about this, or we're just going to have people suggesting which one we should play.
Okay, tell me honestly, like, do you find yourself fighting the same monsters over and over again?
You kind of do. I mean, it does have the same sort of JRPG thing that most JRPGs have, where you do end up running around dungeons a lot. But
I do have to say that's kind of, like, that's usually a deal breaker. I really can't stand that.
It's a pretty interesting combat system as far as that goes, at the very least, in that you are not, like, limited to a very specific moveset for each character. And it depends. Like, I've seen it get grindy at times. Other times it doesn't seem like it's terribly grindy. But it's also got this whole other aspect of, like, you are, at least in 3 and 4, a high school student, and you have a whole bunch of other social stuff that you need to go and deal with, and you're going to school, and all this other, like, non-dungeon crawler gameplay.
See, to me, I would probably just be sitting there wanting that to be the entire video game.
Yeah.
So,
okay.
I guess that answers your question, Barid. We enjoy the game Persona 4.
We've answered, no matter which kind of persona you were asking about, we have thoroughly answered this question.
Actually, I never talked about my persona as Reginald Cuthbert.
Yeah, oh yeah, you're the only one that really has a persona.
Yeah, I was gonna at some point step in there and say, well, fuck you guys, I'm the only one who actually does do a persona, and no, I am not like Reginald Cuthbert most of the time in real life. And
I have not actually
play video games in an insane manner when nobody's watching.
I have played Destiny with Josh, and I can vouch for this. He actually is. He has saved me more than once instead of just, like, firing a flamethrower at the boss and killing all of us and wiping the party. So.
You were the one who is actually Leroying into that boss.
Oh, so he doesn't do the thing like in Borderlands where you help somebody up and they're nearly up and then you're like, whoops, butterfingers, and they fall back down.
Oh, that's all we do? That's just all we do.
I did do that once where I tempted him to come out into a very dangerous area to revive me, and then my reviver timer expired and I immediately revived myself.
Yeah, Josh is still an asshole. Don't get me wrong. He's an asshole, but he's not Reginald Cuthbert. That's different.
This reminds me. I'm actually going to play Payday 2 with my sociopathic Borderlands crew for the first time tomorrow.
Oh, God.
Most of us are going in completely blind, so this should be awesome. The very blindest person is playing the team leader. We have roles divvied up. Black Fox is team leader. No. Jabbar has played way too much of the fucking game, actually. He's the only one who has played it, and he's played like 80 hours.
Oh, that's even worse.
We told him not to, and then he played more. Anyway, yeah, Black Fox is playing the disgruntled team leader. I'm playing the guy who gets left behind. FaZe is the extraterrestrial spotter, and Jabbar is the refreshment stable. We've got a pretty complete heist crew.
That sounds like a really... You're going to have so much fun, and I'm just so happy for you. Okay, next question.
Shemus says, having never even played the game.
I played a bit of Payday, and I did not enjoy it. It was tedious as hell. I thought it would just be like Left 4 Dead. I found it really, really annoying. Oh my god.
It's shittier Left 4 Dead.
Yeah.
With cops instead of zombies.
Okay, last question. Do you think it's better to balance the costs of items and upgrades based on what they'd be worth in the world, or based on what they're worth to the player? Like the parachute jump upgrade in Deus Ex Human Revolution, seems like that would be the most expensive augmentation in real life, but in terms of game effect, as you pointed out on Spoiler Warning, it's generally just a convenience, and other upgrades are much more useful for game-related tasks. Okay.
So, we kind of got into this before the diecast got started, and then we were like, wait, no, we should do the diecast first.
Yeah, specifically I don't know if there's anything to really talk about here, and then I presented a position, and then I immediately got disagreements, so...
from everybody else, so yeah. I think it depends on what kind of game we're talking about. Like, so, for Mountain Blade, I would not like it if all weapons were super expensive like they are in most games, because that doesn't make a whole lot of sense in a game where there's supposed to be a sort of realistic economy in a feudal state where you would expect to have weapons kind of available fairly often.
But conversely, like the Hote weapons in Mountain Blade with fire, and I can't remember if it's sword or steel, you know, where you have to pay like $120,000 for a double barrel pistol that's custom made. Fire and sword. There we go. I'll figure it out.
Yeah.
That makes sense. And that's fun, too, because it gives them a workup.
Fire and sword has a fun localization in that they replaced all of the crossbows with gunpowder weapons. So you get... But they didn't change any of the modifier names. So you get, like, items like bent bullets.
Yeah, that's awesome.
And cracked bullets. And it's like, wait a minute. That doesn't make any sense. How do you bend a bullet? Like in this timeline, bullets being like, you know, the spherical balls. Yeah, other games, it makes more sense for it to be based on how much it's worth to the player. I think it really depends on what level of verisimilitude we're talking about here. Like, if it's really that big of a deal for things to make a lot of sense in-universe.
I would expect The Last of Us, if they pulled some of that bullshit of, like, crazy prices just for gameplay reasons, that would be as annoying as hell. Because that's supposedly a really realistic world. But in
or
Fable...
Metro.
Yeah, or Metro. But when you get into Fable, it's like, who cares? It's all horseshit. Whatever.
Yeah,
just
Fable
pay your
is already
gold pieces.
Kind of like going with that it's a fairy tale anyway kind of.
Yeah, exactly.
Angle.
So yeah, it really depends on. It depends not just on the verisimilitude of the world, but the texture of the world. Like, comedic games, even if it's not supposed to be a joke, if the game is a little bit funny, you just put up with so much more nonsense. Where if you've got a grim dark, the devourer of worlds is going to eat this kingdom, and somebody wants to charge me $1 million for a sword, you're immediately like, come on, shut up. You're a loser.
Like, Marlo Briggs, for example, if they couldn't buy helicopters in 100 packs, I mean, like, if they were, like, realistically priced, then it would probably not make a whole lot of sense.
Okay, nothing else about pricing of items?
I guess I'd just say that remember you're making a game first, and a realistic simulation of a world second. Don't do anything that makes the experience worse for people, just because it feels right. But that's
good
a pretty
advice.
Fucking obvious caveat.
And while this is not really relevant to the cost of upgrades, can I just point out how much I hate games where buying the next sword or gun or whatever costs 9,000 gold, and then when you sell it back, it sells for 25 gold? Because that just makes me so angry.
Yeah. Well, and it encourages you to not get the next upgrade, because you know, oh man, I'll save $9,000 if I can skip an upgrade tier, and then you spend more of the game, like, not having fun and being underpowered. And it's like, if you want the player to have it, it's better to, like, not punish them for buying upgrades. And then if you need to balance the economy, you know, give them a money sink somewhere else. Or lower, you know, move the two prices closer to each other, but choke off their supply of gold somewhere else. Just don't do that where it costs 9,000 and you sell it back for nothing, because that will make them wary of buying upgrades, and it will make them want to experiment less, and they'll stick with one weapon more, and you are sending a message to the player, don't change weapons, stick with one, don't experiment. And you probably don't want that. Okay, that's a diecast. Thank you for listening. Say goodbye, everybody.
Goodbye, everybody.
Bye, everybody.
Goodbye, everybody. Wait, that actually makes total sense.